Okay, so Mr. Manconi, you were up, and Mr. Peter Lauch, CEO of RTG, is also with us, and Mr. Manconi and his team are doing the presentation, and I believe we have them up on the screen as well.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of committee. Joining me today on my right is Michael Morgan, who I announced earlier this year. He's the director of light rail construction for Stage 1 and will also be the director of construction for Stage 2. He works and reports directly to me. He's got a wealth of knowledge and experience on testing and commissioning rail systems, vehicles, and has worked both in the private sector side and now in the public sector. To my left is Mr. Peter Lauch. He is the CEO of RTG, so the entire project reports through to him and to his executive committee. He is also part of RTM, the Rideau Transit Maintenance Group, which is the group that has the 30-year concession period. So Mr. Lauch has a vested interest in seeing the successful build of this project and getting to revenue service. So, Mr. Mayor, I want to start off today with we have another element of Ready for Rail, which is our campaign for our customers to familiarize themselves with the system. You're going to go, I'm going to show you a short video. This is part of a larger initiative. It's an interactive 360 video that you can navigate the station, Lion Station in this case. We'll also have this for the vehicle, and it's going to demonstrate the great work and the great design of these station and the excellent work that RTG has done to date on the civil side of building this infrastructure.
Welcome to our demonstration of the 360-degree virtual tour of the Confederation Line's Lion Station. We start at street level, the Queen Street entrance by Place de Ville. Customers can take the stairs to reach the train or use one of the elevators. This tour lets us take a virtual elevator.
Ici, nous sommes au niveau 3, au bas des escaliers et des escaliers roulants qu'on peut voir en haut. Les escaliers roulants fonctionnent en continu pour faire monter les usagers vers le niveau supérieur. Le niveau où nous nous trouvons est relié au complexe de la place de ville. Maintenant, nous allons suivre les panneaux d'orientation pour nous rendre au niveau 2, le hall.
Here, we find the ticket machines where customers can buy, load, or check the balance on a Presto card, buy a one-day or multi-day pass, and buy a single ride ticket. The machines include a video chat help feature that allows customers to connect with an OC Transpo customer service representative live on screen. These are the fare gates, where customers tap their Presto card, smart card, or multi-day pass. They can also scan the barcode on a ticket or one-day pass to enter. Accessible fare gates are wider and they have an additional smart card reader at an accessible height. They are labeled and can be found by following the tactile wayfinding strips on the floor.
Après les portillons se trouve la zone de tarification contrôlée dans le hall. Allons maintenant sur le quai. Remarquez que les escaliers de l'ensemble de la station sont équipés de rampes d'accès sur lesquelles les usagers peuvent faire rouler leur vélo pour la montée et la descente des escaliers. Et nous voici sur le quai, la zone qui longe les voies où les passagers montent dans l'eau-train et en descendent.
The platform includes a trans-secure waiting area with closed-circuit TV cameras, enhanced lighting, and emergency phones. The wires that supply electricity to the trains are known as the overhead catenary system. Fencing will be removed prior to opening to the public. The platforms include warning strips and intercar barriers to keep customers safely away from the platform edge. Let's head back up to the concourse. And now we'll head over to the Lion Street access, which is two levels up.
Nous allons prendre l'ascenseur virtuel encore une fois. Et nous voici à l'entrée qui donne sur la rue Lion. Merci de vous être joint à nous pour cette visite virtuelle de la station Lion de la ligne de la Confédération sur la ligne 1 de l'eau-train.
Welcome to our demonstration of the 360-degree...
So, Mr. Mayor, next I want to take you through the update of the stations east heading in a westerly direction. The stations, as you can tell from the exterior and that interior view, are virtually complete. RTG is doing their last piece of certification and paperwork necessary to get what's called final occupancy permits. So as you move from east to west, you can see the stations are complete, not only from the exterior, but also when you look interior, all the finishes, signage, wayfinding, all the customer-facing elements that we've talked about in the past are complete, and it's certainly a great indication of the great work that's been done in terms of these stations, which I continue to believe are best in class in terms of LRT systems around the world. That's U Ottawa station, and then down below, again, Fairgate signage and all the finishing touches that have been completed. I want to pause here, Mr. Mayor. You'll recall back in September we had serious concerns about the work that was outstanding, the civil work that was outstanding at Rideau Station. I do have to give RTG credit where credit is due. Literally hundreds of personnel in this station representing thousands of labor hours. That was your station back in September. This is Rideau Station today. Same view, that glass in the back is the artistic integrated art with etched glass. The finishes are all done. There's some minor testing and commissioning works underway. But again, they've done a phenomenal job of accelerating the civil work that needed to be done in this station. So Rideau Station is also complete. Parliament, same thing, an example of some of the finishes and wayfinding. Integrated art, that's an intertrack barrier where you, rather than just having boring metal there, there's some great artwork that's been done with our artists and our arts groups. And then Parliament Station. Parliament Station is complete. This is that outstanding artistic roof that you are getting. It will be, I'm sure there'll be millions of photographers taking pictures of this, tourists, welcoming tourists to our city, and also our everyday customers. So Parliament is complete. There are a bunch of technicians installing this intricate ceiling art where no piece is like the other one. So it's a great initiative, and it will make that station certainly iconic. Lion Station, as you saw, is complete and ready for future use. Pimisi Station, same thing, positioned well. And Tunney's Pasture, also in a very good complete state. So with respect to the civil work and the stations, the key push is for RTG to get occupancy permits. I want to thank Frank Bedin, Mr. Willis, and their building inspectors team, John Buck. They're doing a phenomenal job of helping RTG get that final push to get all the necessary letters and documentation and to get final occupancy so that we can then go in as OC Transpo and get familiar with the stations and start to operationalize them. I also, you know, today in today's newspaper, Mr. Willing did an article, and I want to thank him for drawing the attention to the great work that our inspectors are doing. They're doing their due diligence. They're finding out areas that needed to be addressed, and Mr. Morgan has 8 full-time inspectors out there. And I remind everyone, this is the largest civil project in the history of Ottawa, and finding issues that need corrective action and corrective measures is part of any construction project, whether you're renovating your kitchen, building a house or a building. This is day-to-day normal practice, and heaven forbid if we had a $2.1 billion project with no issues or no deficiencies. So someone asked me if I'm concerned about that. Not one bit. The inspectors are doing their job. The building inspection team is doing their job, and RTG is doing their job in addressing those issues. And then also an important reminder is that they have a 30-year concession period that they're heavily penalized if things don't go well. So it's in their best interest for RTG and RTM to build that infrastructure accordingly. So the elements that are being tracked, and this is critical. This is an important part of the presentation. There is total congruency and alignment with RTG, the Executive Committee, and the City of Ottawa. Believe it or not, we're down to 8 things to complete this $2.1 billion state-of-the-art LRT project. And some of these you've heard me talk about in the past. The first is very, very important. You need your fleet. We need 15 double vehicles running from end to end to provide our peak hour service. And then there's 4 single vehicles that are needed for spares and for swap out in the event that there's issues with any vehicles. And RTG and Alstom have some work to do in that regard to get that fleet availability count where it needs to be. Station occupancy, I think that's imminent. Mr. Lausch and his team have been working with building services, and we think that we'll get station occupancy very soon, certainly in the east, and then head in a westerly direction. The tunnel ventilation system, I'm going to show you some photos of that in a moment. These are very critical life-saving systems in the event of smoke or fire in the tunnel. They control the flow of movement of air, smoke, need to be operated in any emergency situation. So there's rigorous testing. There's 3 critical elements that we've asked RTG to complete, and they're working on that to provide us that information. The testing of the train control system, the TALIS CBTC system that I talked about in the past, it's progressing very, very well. There are some final tests and protocols that need to be signed off on by TALIS and by RTG, and then that completes that part of the regime. So there's progress on that front. The SCADA, that's the operations and monitoring and control system that's fed into our control room. Some of you have been in our control room. That's so our operators can see the trains, can see the fans, can see the all the customer-facing elements, and can make adjustments on the fly as they need to provide that integrated mobility to bus and paratranspo and the diesel train system. The final test of the power system, that's the overhead catenary system that drives power to the trains, to the lights, to the stations, and so forth. There's some final checks and balances that RTG is doing there. And then number 7 is very, very important. This is the one that, you know, will make us all sleep well at night, and that's the independent safety auditor signing off on a very rigorous system assurance plan. It's thousands of pages of documents signed off by engineers, mechanical engineers, systems engineers, track specialists, where that information is provided to us and is signed off to ensure that the system is safe. And again, that's another check that's been built into the contractual requirements. And then number 8, this is the practice plan. Just like your final exam, you want to study. This is RTG has offered to do practice planning. They're not contractually obligated to it to do it, but running end-to-end, 15 double trains, so that they can get ready for some critical tests that leads to RSA. And we think that's an important element that needs to occur. Unfortunately, that has not occurred yet because of the fleet count, but we're looking forward to them achieving that one. So fleet availability, we have some of the best light rail vehicles in the industry. These are built by Alstom. They do, like any vehicle build out, have issues that need to be addressed. It's part of a ramp up of a new fleet. They go through them systematically. The testing and commissioning that we're doing, we identify issues. Their technicians, the Alstom technicians, identify issues. And there's a whole testing regime to fleet systems. So fleet availability is critical, and you want it to be stable and robust so that when you enter a revenue service, you can depend on the vehicles. This is the tunnel ventilation system that I was talking about. This is one of them. This is at the bottom of Rideau Station. They're massive, and I wanted to show you this picture because it gives you a scale of how large they are. Not only are they large, but they're complicated. They're run by computer systems and subsystems, and they're very, very critical in the event of smoke or fire in a tunnel. They need to be controlled remotely. They need to be understood and tested and commissioned. Our fire department will depend on these in the event of an incident. And they're done around the world. It's not like we're doing anything new. But you need to take your time and go through these safety protocols and ensure that they're robust. We're almost there. RTG has 3 deliverables that they've committed to giving us in this regard. The monitoring and control systems, can't say enough about this. We have these types of rooms throughout the system, literally thousands and thousands of kilometers of wiring, hundreds of thousands of connection points. RTG has done a lot of testing, end-to-end testing of all the systems, so these control your fire alarms, your next stop announcements, your escalator controls. Everything gets fed back to the control room so that you can monitor and control your system. So there's a lot of work that's been done in that regard. And then the power system, you've seen this overhead catenary system. One of the benefits of the harsh winter that we're getting is certainly RTG and RTM is testing its resiliency, everything from freezing rain to a lot of snow and so forth. So it's pushing them in terms of testing their equipment, their winter response plans and so forth. And we're working with them. We've had some very good debriefs and lessons learned to date. So this slide is also very important. This is a reminder of what needs to be done by RTG to get to revenue service availability, the RSA. It's contractual obligations. It's non-negotiable. We're not deviating. We're not, unless instructed by council, my line is the same line I've used over and over again. $2.1 billion worth of infrastructure meeting the requirements of that project agreement, move 10,700 passengers per hour per direction during the peak with the prescribed headways and the end-to-end trip times. It needs to be reliable and needs to be consistent. Why? Once you flip from bus rapid transit to light rail, you can't unpack that. You'll be the busiest LRT in North America. 325,000 of your customers, and you heard from a lot of them last week, depend on your transit system, that BRT. 80% of them will be affected by this change. It has to work very, very, very well. And so I know RTG doesn't like my, I sound like a broken record to them, but I will be unrelenting in ensuring we get what we've paid for, and there is no deviation from my perspective and my team's perspective, and I can tell you the city manager has been very consistent in that regard also. So number one, all system assurance, all that safety documentation, finalized, complete, checked, and submitted. All the project construction and site work completed. I know some councillors have asked me what are they permitted to leave behind. Landscaping because of the winter, no different than your house when you move in. Some final touch-ups and so forth. Tunnies, I showed you one of the walls. There's some mosaic tile that needs to go there. In fairness to RTG, they can't do that in cold winter, so they'll do that in the spring. But all the major construction work and site work needs to be completed so we can operate that system. All the testing and commissioning requirements, including, and this is embedded in the agreement, they have to do what's called a trial running test. 12 consecutive days of near perfect running of the system end to end, including their maintenance regimes. And if they fail, if there's a bad day during that 12 day period, we reset the clock. So again, in RTG's world, they're most interested in getting that practice plan running so they can study for that final exam, because they need to get to that point before we can move into revenue service availability and before they get any the remaining payments from us. Compliance with all safety requirements as approved by the safety auditor. That's the auditor that's on the project. It's different than your oversight auditor. Don't mix the two. His world starts after we go into revenue service. So there's layers of checks and balances, but they have to comply, and that auditor has to put in a statement of no objections. So every documentation he receives, he says, I'm fine with this, I don't have any objections. And operational readiness on all fronts, including maintenance. So looking forward to RSA, we're monitoring all the critical elements to ensure they're ready, not just on the build, but also on the maintenance end of things. We're going to continue our operational readiness program. And then third bullet, planning for RSA, the schedules, the workforce adjustments, route changes, booking logistics, and so forth. I want to pause there for a moment, Mr. Mayor, and just remind everyone, because last week we had a transit challenge, and I heard from many of you, I'm still hearing from many of you, I saw the tweets. We're not tone deaf to that, but a reminder, and I remind RTG of this all the time, the changes to getting to revenue service don't turn on a dime. We have to do changes months in advance. So the customers that are, I worry about our customers, I worry about our employees, and I worry about yourselves because you're getting the brunt of the complaints. The changes you're seeing and a lot of the complaints that you're seeing now associate with the route changes we did in anticipation of the November revenue service date change. those people that are stuck at Tunney's Pasture, whose roots got changed, or those people in the East End that are seeing some of those challenges, that's because we had to change our roots months in advance. And so when we hear about RSA, we need to have the time to do all our route changes, customer-facing interactions, the booking logistics, and it's months in advance in terms of that. So detours, changes to routes, it's not all of it. There's other things contributing to it, winter and so forth, but a reminder of that, because that gets lost in some of this discussion. And we're continuing to provide oversight to RTG and, of course, our Ready for Rail campaign. And lastly, because I know you raise this every meeting with me, where are we with our negotiations with RTD, our discussion on deviations and so forth? We're continuing to use the project agreement to work our way through that. We have not, issued any payments to RTG, and we're holding back those two very substantial payments. And we're continuing, as the city manager has instructed us, to track all incremental costs, which he's instructed the treasurer to deduct from the outstanding payments of RTG when they're in a position to receive those. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That concludes the presentation. Happy to take any questions.
Great. Thank you very, very much, Mr. Manconi. Good thorough report. We'll just get the lights turned back up. So these are questions to both Mr. Manconi and Mr. Louch. Mr. Louch, my question is, will you meet the delivery date of March 31st, 2019, and if so, how confident are you that you're going to meet the deadline that you gave us?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We don't contemplate any other scenario than a handover of 31st of March. The eight items that Mr. Manconi put on up on the slide that the city is tracking, As he said, we are aligned, we're tracking those same items. We are satisfied that these are trending in the right direction. There still are some challenges, and I think Mr. Manconi noted fleet availability and end-to-end practice plan running. Those are absolutely critical to our success. We have a very committed contractor. We have a very committed vehicle supplier. So I am still confident that we will meet our obligation and hand over on the 31st of March.
You recognize if you miss that deadline, because you've missed two deadlines so far, that you're going to be, and your company will be $1 million poorer. So you have an incentive, obviously, to meet the deadline.
We have a lot of incentives, Mr. Mayor. And we're meeting with Mr. Cantalakis and Mr. Manconi and Mr. Morgan on a regular basis to update them on progress on these eight items. We have some obligations in the PA to provide advance notice when we're ready to achieve substantial completion. Right now, we're still on track to do that. But as I said, if there's, you know, we're meeting and updating on these key metrics on a regular basis, and we'll continue to do so. And if things start to deviate, well, we'll have that frank discussion with Mr. Manconi, Mr. Cantalakis, and Mr. Morgan.
So one of the concerns I have is that you have to meet 12 consecutive days of running. There are not a lot of days left in February. There's how many days in March? 31 days in March. That seems to put a lot of pressure on you to get 12 consecutive days. Now, I recognize it's not 12 perfect days. If there's a small glitch that's not safety-related, that can count as one of the days. But the challenge is if you go to 8 days and then all of a sudden you have a major glitch, you've got to roll the clock back to 12 days. So you're still, even with that scenario, confident we can see service, or, in essence, the keys, as we say, handed over to the city on March 31st.
Yeah, yes, sir, we are. And that's a function of the work that we're doing right now. We're doing as much testing and commissioning and checkout as we can. We have not a lot of float, that's for certain. Those 12 days have to run well. And as you noted, they don't have to be 100%. There's a scorecard where we monitor the success of the day at the end of every day, and that then dictates if we go on to the next day. But the intent is to replicate revenue service, and right now, as I said, we're on track to do so.
So the biggest concern I have is obviously the safety of the system and making sure that we receive a system that is 100% safe and secure for passengers, for employees. In terms of your concern about any of the aspects such as the vent, you want to make sure the ventilation system is working. Do you have any concerns at this stage that there are any issues involving public safety that we should be made aware of or that may not be in place by the time revenue service begins in April?
No, I'm very confident that what we need to have in place for the safety of the public is in place. The critical systems are the TVS, the tunnel ventilation system, as Mr. Manconi explained, and we had the opportunity to show yourself and some of the councillors the complexity of these systems. As Mr. Manconi mentioned, it's a life safety system. It's not about, you know, providing heating, ventilation, or air conditioning in the tunnel or the stations. It's hopefully we never use it. Hopefully the only time we run the fans is once a year when we do testing. But I am quite confident now that those systems are correct. They're operating. We did a final test yesterday. As Mr. Manconi said, we have a few deliverables, engineering documents which we have to provide. We provided a draft yesterday. We'll get some feedback from Mr. Morgan this week. And prerequisite to substantial completion is the safety assurance, is the safety certificate from Alstom, is the safety certificate from Talos, the communication-based train control company that we have a safety certificate from them now, by the way. But all these things are prerequisites to substantial completion. We can't start trial running until we have substantial completion. So we need to satisfy ourselves. Obviously, we need to satisfy the city. But first and foremost, RTG needs to be 100% satisfied that all of the safety prerequisites are in place before we start any kind of trial running.
I mentioned that this will be the third date that you've given us. Obviously, you were overly optimistic on the other two dates. Why should we believe that you're going to meet the deadline of March 31st when in two other occasions you didn't come close to it?
So in a project of this size, with so many different sites going on in parallel, 14 sites, the complexity of the tunnel ventilation system, the computer-based train control system, communications-based train control system, CBTC, there's always some uncertainties. As we get closer and closer to the finish line, those uncertainties are less and less. As I said, tracking those eight key critical items, we're confident now that the level of uncertainty in those items is slowly diminishing to zero, and that's what makes us confident that we can still meet that date.
The final point, and either Mr. Manconi and Mr. Louch can comment on it, the issue of deficiencies. I understand in a project of this magnitude that there are going to be literally hundreds of deficiencies, some of them significant and some of them less so. You've worked on large projects like this, Mr. Louch, and as your consortium. Is there any concern that the number of deficiencies that we are experiencing in our system is out of perspective or out of context with other major projects of this kind?
Mr. Mayor, I don't believe so. We have, as I said, we have 14 job sites going on in parallel, three huge underground stations, a very large maintenance and storage facility with lots of rolling stock in the yard. As Mr. Manconi said, the article this morning, I mean, it was actually, in my opinion, it was actually not a bad thing because it proves that we're all doing our jobs. Of the metrics that Mr. Willing put in the article, the majority of NCRs are from us, not from the city. We're monitoring our own people. And as well, another prerequisite for substantial completion is that we need to make sure that any critical NCR is resolved, completed, and closed. If not, we don't get substantial completion, and then we can't start trial running. We are allowed to have some that are outstanding, but only if they fall under the definition of a minor deficiency under the PA. And we're working very closely. We have regular meetings with the city to review the PA compliance matrices and to review the deficiency lists.
Mr. Manconi, anything on the deficiencies you'd like to add other than what you said earlier in your presentation?
No, I think that's it, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Councillor Eglai, that's the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of questions. First for, I guess, for RTG primarily. You talked about having a scorecard, so you didn't need to have the perfect 12 days. How far off plumb are you allowed to be? So do you need a score of 80%, 92%? Like, how does that work?
So at the end of every day, we'll be looking at our scorecard. And the scorecard, there's a minimum percentage that we have to complete or that we have to achieve. And if I recall correctly, it's in the order of 96%. But the parameters that we're measuring They run from everything from maintaining of the appropriate head time between the vehicles, the station dwell times, but also some of the facility-related items. So it's a real mix of parameters.
Okay, just to follow up on some of the mayor's line of questioning, the 12 days concerns me as well. We've got 47 days left before the 31st. I think we can write off the next couple of days in the city because of the snowstorm. You know, so you're getting pretty close. When do you anticipate that you're going to take your first run at getting a 12-day consecutive? What's that target date?
So right now we're targeting the second week of March to start trial running. And we do have a little bit of float, but not a lot.
Okay. Now, Mr. Manconi, I'm going to flip over to you now. So assuming starts middle of March, get your 12 consecutive days, you get it on March 31st, what is your anticipated gap, if you will, before you think you might be able to open it up to the public? What sort of a timing are we looking at?
If they achieve March 31st, Mr. Mayor, we need about 2 weeks of prep work, and then we can get into launch mode. So by the end of April, we're launching.
Okay. Thank you for that. We saw a couple of slides that referenced the city safety auditor. And I don't know, I believe he's in the audience. He's not in the audience. Okay, well, maybe you can be his proxy.
Mr. Mayor, I don't want to confuse. There's two roles. There's the project safety auditor, and then there's the city council one. That's a different mandate. His authority only takes over once the project has been signed off to the city and they've achieved RSA. So there is a safety auditor on the actual project site. Different roles.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And the safety auditor that you referenced in the slides is the one that's actually on the project, correct? And you talked about the ventilation system as one of the key components that you want to know is working properly in case of fire, what have you. What's your top three safety issues that you're going to want that auditor to focus in on and be certain of?
There is no top three. That auditor has a mandate to look at all of the system assurance programs, which is based on a very complex risk management model. So they early on in the project, they identify all the risks, and they look at all those elements, and that drills through. But on tunnel ventilation, as an example, there's a standard industry best practice and regimes that they need to meet. There's codes, there's fire protection codes and so forth. So that safety auditor will look through all that documentation, as will our staff, and make sure that they're in compliance with all those from a design and an actual field test regime. On top of all that, I know Mr. Lausch, to his credit, he's brought in one of the leading world experts on tunnel ventilations, and we brought in the North American expert on the city side, and when those two individuals get in a room, they were talking the same language, they were talking the same issues. That's how we got down to three pieces of information that Mr. Lausch is getting us on, and which included some testing last night.
Okay, and I want to follow up on the discussion about, in effect, two safety auditors. One council appointed, one. So when does that shift happen? When does that responsibility shift happen? Is it on March 31st, or is it on opening day of the line? When, walk us through that. When does the city appointed safety auditor take control of that aspect?
Once the system is launched, I believe after the first year of operation, Mr. Morgan will correct me if I'm wrong, the city's oversight person prepares a report to council on how the system is in compliance with the delegated federal oversight that you got from the federal government, from Transport Canada, because we are self-regulated. So his mandate is to ensure that you're meeting the requirements of Transport Canada's letter to you. So he takes over after the system is launched.
Ms. Morgan, you're leaning towards, you have something you want to add to that answer?
No, I think that's right. Effectively, the compliance officer starts right away. As soon as you go into service, he will put a work plan together to monitor the compliance of the operator, monitor the compliance of the maintainer with the regulations for the system. At the end of the first year of service, come back to council and report on those results.
Okay, and back to you quickly, Mr. Manconi. So you did reference what our what our transit riders have been going through with the changes in anticipation. I think every counselor has at least one route that's more troublesome than the other. In my area, you and I have talked about this many times, the 86. Can you walk us through what people who are experiencing difficulties with that route right now can hope to see once the train is in operation? What's the benefit going to be to them for the time they've spent waiting for this to happen?
Certainly. So if we take the route 86, and there's a number of them that are similar, last year we terminated that route at Tunney's Pasture in anticipation of the revenue service being launched in November. Prior to that, that route would take you from suburbia all the way to right downtown, no transfer needed. Currently they get off at Tunney's Pasture and they have to do a transfer onto another bus to get them to downtown. Yes, there's many options, but they do have to, we've introduced a transfer. When the train opens, they will get off at Tunney's Pasture. They will not need to worry during the peak periods about any schedule because the trains come very, very frequently, less than every 5 minutes. They go down to the concourse, there's a train waiting or a train soon approaching, and they head downtown. And the value proposition is, yes, you're injecting a transfer, but your reliability increases in terms of your end destination. And then the piece that isn't being talked enough about is the bus routes that used to go in deep into downtown and get caught into local traffic will stay in their neighborhoods in the east, the west, and the south, so bus reliability will also increase. So you'll have a better commute getting to your transfer point if you are transferring to rail. The reliability will increase because those buses don't have to go into downtown. So there'll be a positive on the bus side. There's reliability in terms of your commute. And then as you expand the system into stage two and so forth, you start to leverage quicker commute times, more reliability, and so forth. And reminder that stage one was your critical infrastructure build of the tunnel, because you could not move any more buses through the core. So you had to build this first piece to get that capacity, which unlocks you for the next 30 years.
Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you. Councillor Elshantiri, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Mr. Mancone and team. Mr. Mancone, on slide 25, you said city will continue to track all incremental costs, which will be deducted from RTG's outstanding payment. Would those numbers be brought to this committee to see how did you end up with whatever the number is going to be?
We've done a couple of things, Mr. Mayor. We brought a report to Transit Commission last year with the first delay. The Treasurer issued a memo, I believe, it was in December on the total to date. And thirdly, we've built in the recoveries into your budget that's before you, so you'll see that. We can certainly elaborate that either at Transit Commission or at FEDCO or at Council entirety. And then any continued adjustments just get added to that, and we just adjust incrementally, so it's a month by month on that basis. But there was a memo that was issued in December, and in the future, if Council wants to have the tally, we can certainly update that.
So that tally would become public information or public knowledge. That's what I'm trying to get at.
I'll ask the Treasurer to comment on that.
Certainly, Councillor, we can bring the information to this committee to say how much we have deducted from it. I can't guarantee that it would be before the payment, though. We have a very tight window. We have 5 days to make the payment when we finally receive the independent certifiers. Go ahead to do so. So if there's no meeting scheduled, I wouldn't be able to, but we would bring it to the next meeting after that.
So eventually we'll come to this committee with the tally of all the increments.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Treasurer. My other question, Mr. Mayor, is Mr. Mancone, you talk on slide, I believe, 23. It's not going to be complete. And you talk about some of the landscaping and some of the other stuff where weather permitted, but you know as well as I do, the first reaction of people is to see, obviously as a finished product, is, you know, like you can have a beautiful house, but if it's going to be a mull of mud and you can't walk to get to the house, really, it's not something. So how much your expectation is going to be incomplete work before the opening day?
Mr. Mayor, I think we'll be fine there. Again, RTG did a big push on landscaping in the fall. And so, you know, go to Tunney's Pasture, which was the last station. You're walking on Interlock. The trees were planted. All those things. There's a stone wall that was done there. The bike racks and so forth. I think there'll just be a few spots on that. And then even on things such as signage and deckling and so forth, their heating areas, those big white lanterns that you see everywhere, they're going to have a big O on them, a red O. I know Mr. Lausch is going to heat those things up and then put the decals on them and so forth. And that's why I was showing you the finishes also. So that first impression is an important impression. And then you have the underground stations, which, you know, Rideau, when you go through those entrances, everything's finished on both sides and inside the Rideau Mall itself. So I believe it'll be minor in some cases.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Mr. Marconi.
Thanks, Councillor Al-Shantiri. Councillor Leeper, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. I might just ask the camera person in front of me to step aside for a moment. Thank you. A couple of different questions. I think the fleet availability slide was maybe a little glossed over. Mr. Manconi, you said that there was work to do to get fleet availability. We need to have 15 double trains ready at RSA, and we need to have 4 spares. Is there a point, at what point do we say a vehicle is ready? There's some sort of a certification?
Yes, there's a very rigid vehicle acceptance process. There's testing, commissioning, and then you put them out on the track and you run them and you make sure that all the systems and the subsystems are working, and they need to be near perfect. There can't be any major issues. There's thousands of parts on those systems, on those vehicles, and they do get thoroughly checked. We have vehicle experts that oversee that, and then there's a very rigid process for acceptance and then sign over to the city.
So that sign over is a very specific identifiable step at which we can say the vehicle is ready?
There's a whole clear line of path of documentation, system assurance, safety assurance, and so forth, best practices that gets applied.
So for those 15 double vehicle, or, you know, for the 30 trains plus 4 spares, where are we? What level of certification are each of those at this point? Do they all have that certification as ready?
No, we're getting there. The vehicles, like any other fleet, particularly a new fleet, and remember, this is proven technology, the platform of this vehicle, but it's been winterized, so there's extra glazing, insulation, and other systems, and the ability to go up to 100 kilometers an hour for your future expansion phases, which the vehicle has done and is test track. So there's a series of quote-unquote deficiencies that go through retrofits, no different than when you buy a new bus, a new car, and so forth. There's been 3 rounds of those. They've done all those. There's been some issues with emergency door releases. There was a defect on those. They've found that defect, and they're retrofitting them as we speak. They have 4 technicians on that. And then we're left with, currently there's an issue with auxiliary power. I don't want to get too technical, but there's an issue with some power units on the vehicles, which they need to look at root cause. That's restricting them from getting the vehicles to, even before that final phase, but getting as many of them out on the track as they can. So we're watching that very, very carefully, and that's why I'm very concerned about the fleet availability right now. And, you know, we would have hoped by now to have had 15 double vehicles going from Tunney's to Blair. We have not done that.
So how
many we've had is 8 at one time, single vehicle.
And of those 8, are any of them certified, for want of a better word, as complete, finished?
I'll let Mr. Morgan comment. He's a vehicle person.
So there's the crux of them is getting the approval from the train control supplier that they're ready to go, that they can be put into service. There's a final cleanup effort with decals and last kind of interior finishes that is less critical to proving that the train is ready to go. But we have a schedule from RTG that shows all of those vehicles being done before the trial running period, so there's still a bit of work left to be done. We're not there yet. There's still more work. But we have a group of vehicles, approximately 24, that have sign-off by the train control supplier. We need to get the remaining 10. We need to get the remaining defects on the vehicle sorted out.
And I'm sorry, I missed the last numbers there. How many vehicles?
So the train control supplier has signed off 24 out of the 34.
Okay.
So we're getting through it. We're not there yet. We have a bit more work to do, but it is coming.
It doesn't sound then like the remaining issues to finally certify the remainder of those vehicles are overly difficult to solve. Are you confident that we can get those in time?
I would be very cautious with that statement. Your vehicles, until we get there, I won't agree with you on that one.
Okay. No, that is good to know. A second question, Mr. Manconi, first, what is the value of the payments that have been withheld to date thus far?
Approximately 262, I'm looking at the treasurer, it's about $262 million is what we have, and that's split into two payments, not 50-50. If there's a substantial completion payment, then there's a revenue service availability payment, so that incentivizes them to get to that 12 days of consecutive trial running.
So 262 in payments outstanding. We are tracking the incremental cost to the system. Again, can you just give me a ballpark figure of what that number is right now?
I believe the December memo was $25 million. I'm just looking at the treasurer.
Off the top of my head, I'd have to say that's probably close to correct.
Somewhere in the ballpark of $25 million. Just to understand the mechanism, it is the city's intent to make those final payments when the thresholds are met, but we'll be withholding the cost that we have counted as being incremental due to the delay?
The city manager has given us instructions to deduct all incremental costs that the city has incurred, which balances your budget so that we're not in a deficit position. Okay. On operating and all the incremental costs getting us because of the delay.
And Mr. Louch, is it RTG's intention to accept that mechanism? Is that mechanism acceptable to RTG?
Mr. Mayor, no, it is not. We have a disagreement with Mr. Manconi in the interpretation of the rights and obligations that the city has under the PA. In our mind, in our opinion, it's very clear what the rights are as far as delay claims, where it's very clear as to what, if there are any provisions for set-off, which there isn't. However, we do have a good working relationship with Mr. Manconi, and we will have this discussion, and we will hopefully we'll work through this.
Can I maybe ask for legal input? I want to understand what that looks like when you've met your thresholds. We go into RSA. The treasurer.
Excuse me. I don't think we should be getting into negotiating our strategy in terms of how we're dealing with RTG. We hold the purse, and direction has been given very clearly that RTG is not to be paid for our costs incurred. So unless you have a general question, I don't believe it would be appropriate in open session to negotiate or reveal our strategy.
I just want to understand, where does that go from the point at which it is a where does it go from the point at which it is a disagreement?
Yeah, well, eventually mediation and then litigation.
Okay. But in the meantime, the money that has been withheld is still sitting within city coffers.
That's correct, collecting interest.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Tierney.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. John, you might have to rip these questions a little bit. With two stations in my ward, I kind of have a front row seat, and I've certainly seen the trains go a lot faster. I've seen the cross tracks working. But when we get to the 12 days of Christmas, I guess you could say, what will we envision as the number of cars? Will you be testing as if it's a regular work day as well as peak periods? Is there a whole schedule around that? What can we expect to see in the community?
Mr.
I don't think your mic is on, Councillor, or Mr. Manco. Maybe try it again.
Can you hear me now? There we go. Councillor Tierney, the testing requires them to demonstrate their capabilities on all service modes. So morning peak, afternoon peak, evening peak, weekend service, Sunday service, all those regimes. So it's intended to simulate the entire a service curve from the full 7-day period through that. So they run through various scenarios on that.
So that's great. So the coupling of cars and just a rough estimate, how many trains would be rolling around on a peak period, for example?
morning rush hour, you need 15 double vehicles to carry the volume that's required at the headway that's required. Great. And then it scales back from that to Sunday service being your lowest.
Wonderful. The next question, and I don't know if it's RTGRS, so the 31st of March rolls around, we get the keys, everything's happy and good. Come April 1st, there's a bit of a labyrinth, as you know, at Blair Station for safety purposes, the construction site, all the fencing. It's a bit of a maze to get in and out. I do have quite a few questions about, will all those fencings be removed when you guys turn the keys back over? Is that a us or a RTG situation?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's us. We have to provide you a complete station without any temporary fences, without any construction material. We have to make sure that everything is tidy, and that will be done.
Wonderful. And my last question, I bring it up time and again just because we see the extra traffic pressures on Innes, Montreal, and Ogilvie Road. We're working collectively with the province and the ministry, I assume, on the ramp timing. We've had this discussion about getting that 417 to 174 ramp back open. Does it require coordination from RTG, or is this just specifically us working on that?
Mr. Lausch is integrated with us on the peeling back of all the detours, and Mr. Landry, who's the head of that for traffic, knows that that one is our top priority because that's the pressure point for a lot of people. So there's a staging and sequencing of that that we have to. It's integrated with Mr. Lausch, but it's the city and RTG working together.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Tierney. Councillor Dudas, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to get a better understanding in regards to the deadline. So we're looking at March 31st. Mr. Lauch, you're very confident that that's you're going to make it. I'd like to understand how the penalty comes into effect. So if by some chance, you know, the 31st passes and you just can't make it, those 12 days have come and gone, OC Transpo doesn't feel comfortable taking the keys, when do we impose that penalty? Where is it in the contract that says that that penalty comes into effect at 12 midnight?
As soon as they miss it, we send them a notice saying that they've missed it, so the penalty is in effect. And then it resets the clock. They have to give us a new date for RSA.
So there is no grace period. As of midnight on the 31st of March, we can impose that penalty.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. And my second question is, there is going to be a tight turnaround even for OC Transpo once you've received the keys, and your testing. What are you doing to really prepare customers in that interim while you're testing and getting them ready for the actual launch of the train?
So the Ready for Rail campaign spells that out. We have a report coming to Transit Commission in March, which does the final push on information out to all the customers in terms of that. So it's really an amping up of that information to the customers, those videos that we talked about. There's going to be a video on the vehicle. There's going to be mail-outs to customers. There's going to be lots of social media presence. So we're really waiting for, is March 31st locked in? We don't want to do a false start with our customers. They've got enough to manage right now. So we're incrementally feeding them information. Once we get lock-in on that date, then we can move forward with a full push. In March, we're giving the Transit Commission a full briefing on all of the elements of how the system will work at the granular level, all wrapped around the customer lens.
And one last question. What's the next milestone in which we will know the progress? Because, I mean, there's a lot. You've got a tight time frame. Will we hear again as to where this project is at?
I look to the mayor. I believe we will continue to report to FEDCO on updates. So from the city side of things, we will go there. Contractually, Mr. Lausch has a bunch of notice periods that he has to achieve throughout the month of February. And so at the next FEDCO meeting, we'll certainly know whether or not they're tracking in the right direction.
Okay, so if there's any project slippage, we'll know about it. Good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor. That will take place here at FEDCO. Councillor Deans, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Mr. Lausch, for being here. It's kind of a rare sighting for us, and we're happy to see you and appreciate you taking the time. And I can certainly appreciate your desire and your motivation to hand over the keys to the City of Ottawa on March 31st. But I also saw that long laundry list and they weren't small things that need to be completed in a very short time frame. So my question really is to you, Mr. Manconi, where is your confidence level that this system is going to be ready for the city to accept on March 31st? And, of course, as the taxpayers and representative of the taxpayers in this city, as we all want this train system to run, but we don't want to take it if it's not ready because we're just transferring the risk from RTG to the taxpayers. So where are you in your confidence level that this system is ready to transfer to us on March 31st?
Thank you, Councillor. Mr. Lausch knows how I'm going to answer this because we've been doing our due diligence as we've done with every single revenue service availability date that they've given us and oversight on the project. And when I talk about assessments, that's not just a tabletop exercise. That's pros, experts that have tested and commissioned railroads from across North America. We're blessed. We have some of the best in the industry working with us. And so I am concerned about March 31st. I would have hoped to have been here with those eight elements when we did our assessment at the end of January. All of those eight elements tracking very, very well, but they're not closed off. And so, as somebody alluded to early on, there's only days to get to March 31st. I'm happy to be wrong. But I'm highly skeptical that they're going to achieve March 31st. I'm not suggesting that RTG is proposing this, but there is no way, unless I'm directed by council, to accept a subpar system. And to RTG's credit, everything they're building, and once it gets done and tested and commissioned, is state-of-the-art, it's top-notch, it's right up there. But they have to understand that this system has to be very, very robust for those 325,000 customers that we move around every single day. We will not have a second chance to launch. So if I'm wrong and they do make it by March 31st, I'm perfectly fine with that. But I have to do my job and tell council that based on our assessment, there's no probability they're going to make March 31st from our perspective. Without deviation from the project agreement, without accepting a reduced service level or something like that. There's no surprises here. Mr. Lausch knows my position in that regard. We are agreeing to disagree. He is tracking to March 31st. If they make it and they pass all those tests, that's great. If they don't, we're in a different predicament. So.
Mr. Manconi, who is the ultimate arbiter of whether or not that system is ready for handing over to the city? If Mr. Lausch is handing you the keys and you're not taking them, who decides?
Well, he can't do that because of those steps that I talked about. And that's why, there's no us and them here. This is a P3, and I respect Mr. Lausch's commercial interests. I respect them as an organization, and they have a 30-year deal that we need to work through. They want a great product. We want a great product. They want great service. We want great service. But it is so obvious and very straightforward how you get to that revenue service availability. You can't skirt around it. There's no secret path to getting to that RSA. Safety auditor, 12 consecutive days. It's all been signed off. It's contractually secured. So, and to their credit, they haven't tried to circumvent. We've had discussions about, what deviations can we leave, the landscaping and tile works and stuff like that. But they know what they have to deliver.
So, Mr. Lausch, where do you get the confidence that you can deliver when you're so at odds with Mr. Manconi?
So Mr. Manconi and I were aligned on the eight critical items. And I think we both recognize which ones are trending positively and which ones are still potentially at risk. And as Councillor Leeper said, fleet availability, that's one of our concerns right now. And fleet availability leads into end-to-end practice plans. So we're very comfortable with occupancy, tunnel ventilation systems. We have a world-class vehicle supplier who's committed to the
date
with us.
Maybe speak a little closer to the microphone.
Oh, sorry, sir. We've got a world-class
vehicle supplier who's committed to the date with us. It's not just us arbitrarily picking this date. We have full commitment. They've increased their resources. They've increased their vehicle technical staff to try to help us get more vehicles on track. And just to follow up on Mr. Manconi's point, I mean, we are also a customer. We have a supplier, a design-build supplier, that is providing us with the system and with the facilities. We have a vehicle supplier. We need to be satisfied first. We have absolutely no intention of bringing Mr. Manconi and Mr. Morgan to the table and saying, here you go, if we've not satisfied all the requirements 100% ourselves.
Okay, so when do you believe that you will know if you're in a position to hand over the system on March 31st?
Thank you. As Mr. Manconi said, we have certain criteria within the PA. We have to give notices. So we have to give an advance notice of when we believe substantial completion will be achieved, because that's basically tools down. And then the independent certifier and the city, they opine on the completeness of our system, and they will decide after their particular opinion periods if we're ready or not. So the next several weeks are very important. The next several weeks, we need to see multiple vehicles on the test track. We need to start having a robust practice plan. And we'll continue to monitor, and we'll continue to update the city on a regular basis. We have weekly meetings with the executive committee of our subcontractor, with Mr. Kanalakis, Mr. Manconi, Mr. Morgan.
When will the taxpayers have a clear indication of whether or not the system is being handed over on March 31st?
It's literally weeks away.
Weeks away. And how will that be communicated to the taxpayers?
Well, I look to the mayor. I would report through to FEDCO on the next update in that regard.
Okay, I just wanted to ask some specifics. We talked a lot about systems integration and that all those different systems speaking to each other. How is that? Where are we in terms of completion of that integration of the system?
So, I guess, the first thing that we start with is a power system, overhead catenary network, traction power substation network. All those systems are connected back to Belfast Yard, back to the Transit Operations Control Center through a SCADA system. That SCADA system is working. It's complete. The systems, the trains on the track also communicate via the CPTC, the Communication-Based Train Control System, back to the control center. Those systems are in place. We're in final testing on those. We haven't seen 30 vehicles on the track. We've seen between 4 and 8 vehicles on the track. So we're tracking well on the systems integration tests. The issue is the last 5 or 10 tests are, the proof is in the pudding. Show us that you have 30 vehicles running on the system to the headway that we agreed to. That's what's missing. All the individual subsystems, we're getting there slowly. The tunnel ventilation system is connected to the control center for us to be able to turn it on and turn it off. We're into final analysis of testing results. All the individual subsystems are coming together. We need that final test. We need the practice running. We need the trial running to show that it all works, it meets our expectations for service, and that we are confident that we can put it into service.
Is there a particular problem with the west end of this system? Because people are telling me that it's a rare sighting of trains running over on the Tunney's Pasture side of the line.
Thank you. No, there's no particular problem. One of the reasons that we weren't running as many trains on the west end, as you may have seen about a month ago, is because we were doing tunnel ventilation testing. And to do some of the tunnel ventilation testing and the checkouts, we need to shut off power in the tunnel. So the tunnel, of course, is the conduit to get vehicles out to the west end. So we deliberately restricted that for a short period of time.
Okay. And the media have been reporting water in the tunnel. Is that an issue?
No, it's not an issue.
Is there water in the tunnel, or was there water in
there
the
was,
tunnel?
There was during construction. There was water in the tunnel. We also had temporary sump pumps and temporary drains in place. We have fully functional, permanent, redundant systems in place right now. We're in the final stages of there is some water infiltration, or there was, I should say, but we're in the final stages of mitigating that now.
So there's no worry about water seeping into the tunnel in the future?
No, there's not.
Okay.
Can I just add to that, Councillor?
Yeah.
So, and this will be some of our education to the public. Every tunnel has water in it. You go to New York, you go to Chicago, they all have water. There's collection systems for that. It's not pouring in or gushing in, but this notion that we'll never have water in the tunnel, I know that's not what you're saying, but others, just for clarity, the big news item that was the tunnel was flooded was a sump pump, a construction pump in the West End. I'm defending RTG here because they I know the incident. It was a construction site at the end of the tunnel, and the sump pump was clogged. A worker went there, unclogged it, and the tunnel was drained. But every tunnel will have some leakage into it, always. You know, Boston, you can see that, New York City, and so forth. So,
thank you for that. Mr. Manconi, I believe I heard you say that there has been no testing of the trains that have been coupled together. So,
no, there has been some of that. We're looking
but no end-to-end testing.
There has been end-to-end of a few of those vehicles. We want to see 15 double vehicles end-to-end going in all at once, as Mr. Morgan just said.
And does that include loading and unloading of customers when you do the end-to-end testing with the full system running?
What it does is simulates the doors actually open and close at every station, so all of the headways and the times they need to meet will simulate full service during the testing period and then also the 12 consecutive days. We're also doing some customer loading of the systems from an operational perspective, so we have volunteers that are going to come in and load the vehicles and do some testing of that.
Okay, those are my questions. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Councillor Brockington, please.
Thank you, Your Worship, and good morning. Thank you, gentlemen, for the presentation. Just over here. I'm concerned what I've heard over the last hour, just because we have the conflicting information. Mr. Louch, you've given a fairly confident or positive outlook that you are aware of the outstanding tasks, you're aware of how long each task takes, and you're able to estimate with confidence today that you're able to deliver by March 31st. Mr. Manconi counters by saying he has no probability that this will be delivered by March 31st. What is your degree of probability that you will be able to deliver by the end of March?
I'm not going to be able to give you a percentage of probability, but I can tell you that we're not contemplating another date other than the 31st of March right now. We do have a difference of opinion, and we are tracking the same items. And as I said, the next few weeks are very telling. Not only do we have to provide a substantial completion notice, but we won't be able to provide that notice if we do not have multi-vehicles on the test track, if we don't start doing more robust end-to-end testing. I'm optimistic, but I'm a realist as well. We need to make sure that we trend towards zero uncertainties over the next couple of weeks.
But you still believe confidently you can deliver by March 31st?
Yes, I do.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Manconi, I visited three stations last week as part of my journeys across Ottawa. I was at Bayview a number of times. Bayview is not profiled in your presentation today. Are there still outstanding work to be done, not just at Bayview, but at any other station? And if so, what is the outstanding work other than landscaping?
I know Bayview very well. I go by there just about every night, and I drive Mr. Lausch and Mr. Morgan crazy with my text about things that I observe. There's minor finishes. There's the steel columns have a facade that needs to be put on that. The rest is essentially complete. There's some minor things I know they're doing on the second level, and Mr. Lausch can maybe add, but as far as I know, most of it's done.
Yeah, aside from some of the seasonal work, some of the landscaping, And that in itself is quite minor. It's in at Bayview, it's mostly sodding and a few trees on the north side. And as Mr. Manconi mentioned, if you notice in some of the stations, you'll see a green sort of siding that's on some of the steel columns. There's a stainless steel flashing that goes around there. That's what's outstanding.
Thank you. And Mr. Manconi, you talked about in March, your presentation will focus on how the system works and providing some information to members of council in that regard. I'm really interested in the education component for members of the public They've gone through a lot over the last few years with the detours, the challenges with routes. I think the delays have eroded some of the confidence in the system overall, and this is really a good news story. The LRT opening is a good news story, and I think everyone needs to help get that good word out. What is the specific education campaign, rollout, promotion that OC Transport is going to undertake when LRT opens to get people reinterested, re-engaged, riding the rails? That's my first question. And the other question, still with respect to education, is around safety. What if an incident happens in the tunnel, from minor to major? How will people who are in the trains or waiting at platforms know what to do? What is the education campaign going to be to get people aware of how to evacuate, how to react to certain situations? Are we going to have that type of education?
Yes, Councillor, you're spot on. That's exactly what we're going to be talking about in March. It's educating, informing, creating some of that buzz, also talking about, you know, what happens if the system goes down, so what's called bus bridging in the industry, that, you know, if the train breaks down, where do you go for your nearest bus and so forth, emergency evacuations. We will highlight many of the best-in-class emergency features that we have. How the vehicles can't get stuck in between stations and so forth, all those things. So that's all coming in March at a very high level, and then we're also going to equip you and the community with a bunch of tools, both social media tools, hard copy media tools, articles in your local papers, newsletters, and so forth. So it's all waiting. We're waiting for that, you know, we have a clear line of sight onto the launch period.
Great, thank you. Councillor Meehan, please.
Thank you, Your Worship. My question would be to, I guess, Mr. Manconi and Mr. Lausch. We learned of some non-compliance issues with the ongoing construction of the LRT through access to information. What I would like to know is if we're going to have a complete list that will be submitted to the city, for transparency's sake, of all the non-compliance issues that we have seen, how they have been remediated, which ones cannot be remediated, and what ongoing problems we can expect. Because we've heard about drains being clogged that cannot be opened because there's concrete in them. There are concerns about concrete quality. So I would like to know if there's going to be a complete list throughout the construction, right to the time we take over the keys, that we can look to all the time to see, you know, where are we when it comes to the construction and whether we're confident in what's been done to fix it.
So, Mr. Mayor, as I said during my presentation, all of those items that were identified were either identified by RTG or our inspector staff. I know at the high level, I think we have about 850 total, which, again, is not significant given a project of this scope and scale. 720 of those are closed. 122 of those are being worked on with the city and RTG. And as I've said, in terms of the system assurance program, the auditor oversight, substantial completion, all these matters will be dealt with. Either they will be addressed and closed off, or there's agreement by the city that they can be left as is. And I note that some of these are minor, including, you know, one in today's report talked about a potential tile being compromised because of some honeycombing on concrete. So all of these need to be put in perspective. The drainage issue in the pipe, I can tell you Mr. Lausch and our team are working with our building inspectors. RTG has given us some proposals about enhanced maintenance regimes so that the sump doesn't have any residue left in it and so forth. So anything major, I can assure you, is being dealt with, and the minor ones are either being closed off or they'll be signed off by the city that we can live with that. And I remind everybody that there is a building code oversight on this project, which is legislated and mandated by the province, including elevators and escalators and all the critical systems, hydro and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I thank you for that. Can I just ask one other question? When we missed the other deadline, it impacted a lot of bus routes. So at what point, before we hand over the keys and we go to the new light rail system, are we going to trigger the changes in the buses? And last time we couldn't redo what we had already, you know, what we had done, and it caused a lot of headaches. So at what point are we going to do that transition?
That's a great question, and I can tell you there's a team, an army of OC Transpo staff right now that are sitting on pins and needles trying to figure out whether, if March 31st occurs, we pull the trigger on those final route changes, because you're absolutely right, Councillor. We do not want to invoke any more stress on our customers. And to Mr. Lausch's point, that's why I'm pushing hard about, we need to know if they're going to make March 31st. If not, we got to go to Plan B. I am not imposing more stress and change on our customers. The system has to launch, and we'll do the changes to the bus routes. They can't take any more in terms of that. They've gone through enough.
Mr. Redcoat, what is Plan B?
Don't change the routes until they go to a new date that we're confident in. So another, I'm answering your question. Mm-hmm. I'm not changing the bus routes until we know that they're going to make the March 31st or any RSA date.
Does it make sense if you believe that it's unlikely we're going to meet the March 31st deadline to keep that deadline? I mean, I understand it triggers $1 million penalty for RTG, but wouldn't it be better today to say maybe we should put this off into the future, like make it a little bit further in advance and not have everything being pushed together and not everyone concerning that we're not going to make that deadline anyway?
Two things, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to look to Mr. O'Connor, because I think we're entering into a contractual discussion here. Remember, this is RTG's date. I can't tell them to move the date. You've heard from the CEO that is their date, but I would caution us on having a discussion about moving dates or forcing them to move dates, because then, Mr. Mayor, you'll own it all.
Great. Thank you. Councillor Luloff, please.
Thanks so much for coming today, guys. The RSA date calls for operational readiness on all fronts. Are you confident that the infrastructure at Blair Station is sufficient to accommodate the massive increase in transferring passengers coming and going from Blackburn Hamlet, Orleans, and Cumberland during peak hours, especially in the afternoon when pressures are going to be at their highest?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, just to that transfer question is an important one. You'll recall in my last update, I don't recall if you were here for that, Councillor, we're doing stress tests on all the major transfer stations, and I can't remember if we've done Blair yet. I know we've done Herdman. We're doing Tunney's. I think it's imminent, and what we do is we load it up literally in the middle of the night with a lot of buses. We simulate the volume it's supposed to take through the transfer points, which is out of a computer model. We want to see the model is real. And then we also push it to the breaking point. So we do stalled buses as a simulation, an accident simulated, and so forth, so we can do bypassing around the station. We've done Herdman. I can certainly find out when Tunney's and the other station is being done. That transfer is very, very important, and we are testing the design elements.
So instead of from the bus perspective, how about from the passenger's perspective? How many passengers can the Blair Station platforms actually handle at both the LRT and the local levels? And are there going to be massive pressures faced by the actual passengers on those platforms?
I don't have those numbers here, but I can tell you they've all been sized for current and future growth. I can get Mr. Scrimger to follow up directly with you on all that. There's been a lot of modeling and thought process on customer volume platforms inside the stations and so forth.
With the Trimmer Park and Ride and the Orleans Park and Ride at max capacity before 7 a.m. Every day, are you worried that customers will drive to Blair Station? And do you think that there will be enough parking capacity to accommodate those who choose to do so?
Again, I think what I'll do is, if it's okay with you, Councillor, I'll get Mr. Scrimger and myself and Mr. Morgan to sit down with you and walk through that. I'd want to look at all those numbers in there. A reminder that, you know, this relates to the Transportation Master Plan. There's going to be shifts citywide on how people are going to adapt and change their commute. So we may not have the answer for you on that. I can tell you what we're sized for and how we're going to accommodate it. But yeah, there will be changes in travel patterns, and people will want to adjust based on what works best for them.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Councillor Luloff. Councillor Blay, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And thanks for the present presentation. Last year, when the first delay happened, we specifically did not want to undo the array of bus changes that had already taken place to accommodate the train, because it's a lot of work and it's a lot of confusion, and we thought that the first delay would be, in the grand scheme of things, relatively short. It's now been a year, or your virtual 100% lack of confidence that April will be achieved makes it virtually a year. And presumably the can will be kicked down the curve a little bit and not a lot. I guess I'm wondering, how are we, I appreciate not doing the changes, this relatively small number of changes that are still left, but what are we going to do to help the people who have already experienced the major change and are already going through the pain today?
Well, I think with some of the dialogues we've had with yourselves and some of the actual customers, we continue to help them and support them. I know that at Tunney's, and certainly in Barrhaven, some of the challenges out there, there was people waiting for buses that they didn't have to wait for. They didn't know there was other travel options for them. So we sent out a team of OC Transport customer service reps, both in at Fallowfield and at Tunney's, asking people, what bus are you waiting for? Did you know you could hop on any other bus to get to downtown, and so forth? I think those are all the things that we can continue to do. Communications, better weather, all those things will help. Short of unpacking the very complex matrix of bus routes and untangling that web.
Okay, and so the contract is structured, if I recall correctly from the language, there are all sorts of notification periods, 30 days for this, the 60 days for this, 10 days for this, etc. If they're not going to hit the new deadline, there's obviously a notice period that they have to provide to us ahead of that. The deadline is preceded by substantial completion, again, notice periods. So when are we going to know? The deadline is, 6 weeks away, I guess? You said imminently, but is imminently next Wednesday we're going to find out, or is it, mid-March?
No, Councillor, I didn't say imminently. I said weeks. I'm agreeing with Mr. Lausch. He has commitments within weeks to produce documentation, and I can't tell him not to or hurry up or anything like that. He's got his obligations to meet, so it was weeks. So I defaulted to the mayor, and I said that at the next FEDCO meeting we'd let
sure.
You know where we're at.
I get that, but I guess where I'm going is, once, if your scenario comes true and they don't meet the deadline, then they're providing the notification within weeks. The contract then gives them a certain additional period of time to provide a new RSA date. I think it's 60 days or something like this, and presumably that RSA date will be further into the future than the 60 days. So we're then stretching everything out even further. This is what I'm saying. We've already gone a year. Lots of people have been in pain for a year. What are we planning to alleviate that pain if your worst case scenario, which you said was very, very high, comes to pass?
Councillor, I'm open to suggestions. I don't know. I think you're asking me, will I unpack the route changes? I'm telling you that's a very complicated thing to do. We've had this discussion, you and I. Other than that, take care of our customers, work with you individually, communicate, all those things. Five detours, lots of routes that have been changed. We're down the road significantly. That's why Mr. Lausch hears about it from me literally every single day, that we need to have high degree of confidence to get to that RSA date. So I'm open to suggestions if you have any thoughts as to what we should do. I will say this too, though. There are lots of parts of the city that are functioning just fine. There's hundreds of thousands of people that are commuting without issues. The issue, as I've said over and over again, if you're that one customer whose bus didn't show up or your bus skips you by, it's not a good day for you. So there are hundreds of those that are occurring, if not thousands, every day. But I don't have the magic solution for you to do that. I'm open to any suggestions you may have.
So there have been a number of downtown infrastructure projects that have proceeded that were originally planned to be occurring after LRT was already fully implemented. There are more coming this year. What are we doing to coordinate that construction to ensure more of the downtown isn't completely shut down while the train still isn't available to us?
Mr. Willis and I are joined at the hip. He has an amazing team in infrastructure services, and I've got Phil Landry and his team, like we did on Elgin Street. We pushed very hard, and that technical team was very innovative in making buses a priority through the detours, and we'll continue to do that. I know that you flagged, Councillor, a couple of projects that I've passed on to Mr. Gonche and his team. And Mr. Landry, that there's other ones coming down the pipe. If RTG is delayed, we'll apply that same lens, and I know that Mr. Willis will look at if they need to postpone or delay some of those or bring a balanced approach to sequencing them. We'll do that in the interest of not inflicting any more pain on our transit customers.
So is our perception of inflicting pain only on transit customers, or is it all users of roads, including pedestrians, cyclists, and of course motorists?
Councillor, you know I'm in charge of all modes, and it's all customers of our transportation system. Your question was in the context of transit customers, but as I've proven over and over again on the Elgin Street detour, it's about all modes of transportation. That's the General Manager of Transportation Services.
Okay. Thanks very much, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Blake. Councillor Lieber.
Thank you, Chair. I want to come back, and sorry, I'll ask maybe the counterperson to thanks. I want to come back to the vehicle availability, Mr. Louch. I think I heard you said that you are relying on subs who are behind in delivering those vehicles.
I'm sorry, Mr. Leeper, would you mind repeating that?
I believe, Mr. Louch, you are relying on subcontractors in order to be able to deliver the vehicles on time for you to make the RSA date. What kind of commitments have they have those subcontractors made to you that gives you the confidence that you're going to meet the RSA date?
Mr. Mayor, it's a good question. We meet regularly with so when we talk about vehicle subcontractors, we're talking primarily about Alstom, the vehicle builder. And the other one is Talus for CBTC, but Talus is, we don't have any issues with Talus. The commitment we have from Alstom, we meet with their executive on a regular basis. We had a meeting last Friday, actually, with the North American president of Alstom, and they committed to provide additional resources at the end of last week, and they did. They brought in additional vehicle technicians from France, from Montreal, to provide us 24/7 coverage. That coverage, these vehicle techs are very important because the city operators are doing a great job. They're running up and down the line in the evenings during the days. But every once in a while, a small fault will come up and something they're not familiar with, nor is it their responsibility to rectify that. The addition of vehicle techs from Alstom, our partner, that will then alleviate some of those delays, and that will hopefully alleviate some of the fleet coming off the line and back to the NSF for service.
Have they given you written commitments as to when those vehicles are going to be ready?
We have a schedule from Alstom, which we're tracking, and I think Mr. Manconi talked about, and I think you raised the issue as well, about final acceptance, so we have final acceptance schedules. Just on that point, final acceptance, it's really the walk around that the city and RTG and RTM are doing before the dealer hands over the pink slip to us. The vehicles have been running. They've been operating. They've gone through dynamic post-installation checkouts and static post-installation checkouts. They're running. So that final acceptance, we do have a committed schedule from Alstom. It's very aggressive. We did a couple of vehicle acceptances on the weekend, and we're doing them well into the evenings, and we'll be doing the same thing until they're done. We have 14 out of 34 accepted vehicles now. And again, I qualify that. These vehicles have all been running. They're assembled. They're not in a state of repair. We're doing the final walk around and agreeing on any outstanding deficiencies.
Okay, so and thank you very much for that clarification. I think it is important to understand then you have written commitments from Alstom that we will have final availability of those trains in time to run your 12-day system testing in time to meet the March 31st RSA date.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, we do.
Okay, and I believe you answered sort of my next question, which was what incentive mechanisms and punishment mechanisms do you have with Alstom in order to encourage them to meet those deadlines?
I don't think, Mr. Mayor, I don't think this
I
is...
I think that's private and confidential between the two companies.
Competitively sensitive? Okay, nope, yes. Understood. Yeah. Good. No, thank you very much for that precision. Thank you.
you. Councillor McKenney, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So just so I'm clear on the timeline, you will be back here, FEDCO, in 3 weeks, but March 19th is actually 12 days out from March 31st. And so that is the real about, are we not? I mean, if you have a 12-day testing, unless you do it sometime in between, by March 19th, to know if you're going to make that deadline. Am I correct in that?
So if you work backwards from March 31st, you are correct. That date, the drop-dead date, if you will, to start trial running is the 19th of March.
So that's 5 weeks from today. And that, so you still, that gives you confidence that 5 weeks from today you will be, at the very least, running those trains for a 12-day test.
As I said, we're not contemplating any other scenario than the 31st of March. And we are closely tracking those 8 critical items that Mr. Manconi and I are both aligned on. And the next few weeks will be quite telling. We need to have some success in fleet availability and vehicles running up and down the line consistently.
So if we just go back to the slide that showed the elements that are critical to revenue service, number 7, sign off to be provided on all documents required by the city safety auditor. What does that look like? Is that 2 or 3 documents? Where are we at with those documents? Like, what is that another 15 points, sub-points to these 8? Just want to get a sense of what they look like and how far away we are from having that sign-off.
Mr. Mayor, the sign-off procedure by the safety auditors extremely complex, and there's thousands upon thousands of pages of documentation. But the objective is we need to give the safety auditor line of sight from design conception all the way through to completion. So it's those documents which are compiled, which are put together, which are presented on through regular meetings with the safety auditor. There's hundreds of documents that have to be provided. We've whittled that list down to 25 critical documents. 4 are what we call primary service, and the rest, about 21, are railway related. So we're in the process of getting, the safety auditor won't approve any of these documents. He's not going to take on that liability, but what he does is he provides a statement of no objection. So which means he's comfortable with where we are. He agrees with the design pattern and all the steps along the way from design through to testing. He agrees with that. We've got about half of those complete. The rest are going to be delivered at the end of this week, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And then we, unfortunately, do put a little bit of pressure on the city and the safety auditor to try to churn those through. But we're meeting on a regular basis. We're not blindsiding anybody with them. And the process has been robust and quite thorough.
So if you've whittled it down to 25, and what I'm hearing really is 12, are those last 12 easy to meet? Will we know by March 5th the next time? Because so our next FEDCO is March 5th, 2 weeks after that is the 19th, which is the sort of deadline. Will we know by the 5th how close we are on those safety requirements and having those last? It just seems to me if there are hundreds of documents and we're down to the last handful, they must be pretty critical.
Yeah. No, Mr. Mayor, fair question. We're not starting from scratch. The ones that are remaining, some of the remaining documentation is contingent on getting some system results. We talked about tunnel ventilation system. So we need to just inject some of the test results into the documentation, and then there's 3 or 4 that are attributed to that. That will be complete. So the ones that are remaining, as I said, we're not starting from scratch. They've been in internal circulation for review, and then the next step is to issue them formally to the city. But even having said that, there's been several meetings, regular workshops, where we're presenting the results, where we're presenting the format, where we're presenting draft copies of these documents.
And will there be a point in time when those documents, as we get close to the deadline or past this deadline, that they will be public documents, that we'll know what the safety requirements are that we're still waiting for?
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to look to Mr. O'Connor in terms of what we would disclose. I want his comment on that.
Mr. Mayor, I can't answer that question. I'm not familiar with what the documents actually are. If we got a request under MFICRA or for members of council or the public ask for us, we always try to encourage people to use it by an approach of business as usual, and we would be able to make that determination.
So just so I'm clear, so if we ask for those documents, we might be able to get them?
If we have those documents in our possession, then I would make a determination under MFIPA as to whether or not they are disclosable to the public.
Thank you. So maybe I'll just leave it as, you know, by the time we get to March 5th, I think it would be important for us to know if we're still waiting on some of the safety requirements to be signed off, exactly what those are, in addition to the elements that we are still waiting for on the RSA. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The last person I have on the list is Councillor Eglie for round two.
Thank you very much. I guess I started off, so I should finish off. So Mr. Manconi, you had indicated you have a level of skepticism, to say the least, about the March 31st date. So can you walk us through what happens then? When we were last time we were trying to fix on a date, there was a whole process. There was negotiation back and forth. So assuming you get notice on the 19th, that it's, or before, that it's not going to happen, what does the city then do? Do we enter into a negotiation stage again with RTG to fix on another date? Because I know we have to accept the date. So how does that process work, and what does that add to the timeline of the line eventually opening?
Well, it is a P3, and it's a public-private partnership, and we're fortunate in that we do have good, frank, open dialogue with our partners. Technically speaking, they could keep us waiting right to the last minute. That has not been the case in the past. I'll let Mr. Lausch comment that if there's early indicators that he doesn't believe he will make March 31st, I know that the city manager and I meet with them on a regular basis, that they would share that opinion with us. They understand how sensitive this is to our customers and to city council. So then they would have to give us a new date. I believe it's within 60 days, and it has to be at least a month after. I'm just looking to Mr. Morgan, a month after the original RSA date. The city can deviate from that. We hold all the cards in that regard. And that's where I think a good, healthy relationship, which I would describe this one as being that, where we agree when we disagree, and would do that. But Mr. Lausch is driving the RSA date right now, and theoretically they could wait till the last minute. Again, that hasn't been the past practice. They've had good, open, frank discussion with us, and perhaps Mr. Lausch wants to comment.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think Mr. Manconi articulated it correctly. I mean, we are aligned. We have no intention of blindsiding the city at the last minute if we decide to change the date. We've had good, frank, open discussions. Our executive committee is participating in these discussions, and we've made a commitment to the city that if we do feel that there will be a deviation, that we'll give them ample advance notice.
So we're 5 or 6 weeks out, so I'm curious to know what you define as the last minute. You know, there's the practical, you can't do it after the 19th because you don't have 12 days. That's sort of the practical. But what realistically is your drop dead date? It can't be the 19th.
No, Mr. Mayor, the drop date is not the 19th. And as I mentioned previously, there's notices that we have to provide to the city. I'm not going to argue the semantics of the contract, but I mean, we can't wait until the 30th of March to tell you that it's a no-go. We have an obligation to provide advance notice to the city of when we think we will achieve substantial completion, and that is well before the 19th of March. There's 10 days before that, and there's even an advance notice which has to be provided. So there will be, if there is going to be deviation, and we're not contemplating any, but if there is going to be a deviation, then the advance notice will be several weeks.
Okay, maybe legal can help with this. Do we not have a date when we know whether the date is going to be good? Is there not a drop-dead date so the city knows one way or another whether or not March 31st is the date?
Not to my knowledge, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Mayor, there is, Mr. Lausch is spot on when he talks about, and there's lots of use the words dates, but there's the substantial completion date, in other words, all the construction's done. There is a countdown clock that has been activated right now, and there are dates associated with that that he has to provide us notice on leading up to that.
So I guess the question is, when does the alarm on that clock go off? When does the city know that March 31st is not going to work?
Well, on February the 12th, today, he's giving us notice that he's continuing on the path of getting to substantial completion. We have another notice coming up in a couple of weeks that is the next step towards that. So that's why we're both saying it's weeks to get to substantial completion if he's still on that track. So within weeks, we'll know.
Okay. Anything else, Councillor?
Well, I'm still not sure I'm getting a clear answer.
Our history of giving a specific date hasn't been great around here, so
I don't disagree,
I'm quite comfortable
enough
with a range of dates, and I think that makes much more sense. We have a firm date of the 31st. We've been assured by the company, the consortium, they're going to meet that. There's obviously some skepticism about whether that date will be met or not, and then there are other dates that contractually they're obliged to inform us. And I think it's in our best interest to say it's within the next several weeks. And the minute we have information, my undertaking and direction to staff is that we share that with the public and council.
So just for clarification, so we could know before the next FedCo meeting what's going on?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you both, all three, very much. Appreciate it. Item two, Councillor McKinney, you wanted to...